want a triple scotch.
Oh, that's that. Why?
Apparently the financial crisis is much worse than we thought. All the cabinet have got to make cuts in their spending plans.
Oh, Bernard, would you like a scotch?
Oh, yes, sir. Could I have a large one, please?
Another triple.
Bernard, Humphrey should have seen this coming and warned me.
I don't think Sir Humphrey understands economics, Prime Minister. He did read classics, you know.
He's head of the Treasury.
Well, I'm afraid he's at an even greater disadvantage in understanding economics. He's an economist.
Economic crisis. Can't the cabinet see they've got to be cuts?
Well, they can see they've got to be cuts in other departments, not in their own.
So this morning you ordered a clamp down.
I can't order anything. I'm only the Prime Minister.
You're in charge.
No, I'm not. A leader can only lead by consent. Consensus. That's democracy.
So who is in charge if you're not?
Well, nobody really. There must be. That's what democracy is all about. And as if that weren't enough, I've got a deputation of MPs coming to see me this afternoon about a pay rise I promised them.
What will you say?
I shall say I deeply sympathise, which I don't. They fully deserve their money, which isn't true. And then I shall make it my first priority as soon as the crisis is over, which I shan't. But if they go and vote themselves a whacking great pay rise and then tell everybody else there's no money for their pay rises, it doesn't do very much for the dignity of Parliament, which it doesn't.
But aren't they underpaid, in fact?
Underpaid? Backbench MPs, darling. Being an MP is a vast, subsidised ego trip. It's a job for which you need no qualifications, there are no compulsory hours of work, no performance standards. You get a warm room and subsidised meals for a bunch of self-opinionated windbags and busybodies. Suddenly find people taking them seriously because they've got the letters MP after their name. How can they be underpaid when there are about 200 applicants for every vacancy? You could fill every seat 20 times over, even if they had to pay to do the job.
You were a backbench MP only 5 years ago.
I was the exception. I was the cream. I rose to the top.
Do you think what you say will shut them up?
Who knows? But the public will never stand for MPs giving themselves a pay rise when we're having to cut back on nurses and teachers.
Nurses and teachers? So that's a much more serious problem.
No, no, darling, much less serious. Nurses and teachers can't vote against me till the next election. Backbenchers can vote against me at 10 o'clock tonight. Humphrey, I've just had a very stormy meeting with my backbenchers.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
I mean, if I'd had some warning, I could have softened them up a bit in advance. But the paper only arrived the night before Cabinet.
Oh, indeed, Prime Minister, most regrettable.
Well, it's up to you, Humphrey. Your Cabinet Secretary, you must insist that we get papers circulated earlier.
Alas, there are grave problems about circulating papers before they're written.
Why the sudden crisis? The Treasury must have seen it coming.
Prime Minister, I am not the Permanent Secretary to the Treasury. You must ask Sir Frank.
What would Sir Frank say?
It is not for a humble mortal such as I to speculate on the complex and elevated deliberations of the mighty. But in general, I think Sir Frank believes that if the Treasury knows that something has to be done, the Cabinet shouldn't have too much time to think about it.
But that's an outrageous view.
Yes, indeed. It's known as Treasury policy.
But the Cabinet has questions.
Well, I think Sir Frank's view is that on the rare occasions when the Treasury understands the questions, the Cabinet doesn't understand the answers.
Do you subscribe to that view?
Aye, Prime Minister. I merely try to carry out the wishes of the Prime Minister and the Cabinet.
Well, it's my wish that in future all Cabinet papers should be circulated at least 48 hours in advance of a meeting. Would you tell Sir Frank that, please?
Yes, of course. I shall seek an audience with him at once.
Thank you, Prime Minister. What does Frank think he is? At least old Humpy knows his place. I must say, it was very loyal of him to tell me the truth about Frank like that. They usually all stick together, don't they?
I think Sir Humphrey's rather anxious because of your recent threat to make Sir Frank head of the Home Civil Service instead of him.
Oh. I wonder if I should do something about that. Or if there isn't something to be gained out of keeping them both in suspense.
Well, Prime Minister, you gain an anxious Cabinet Secretary. Is that what you want?
It wasn't just that he was unhappy about the cuts, Frank. He was also very unhappy about your papers arriving at such short notice.
I hope you explained it was because of America's sudden change of policy over interest rates.
My dear Frank, I defended you gallantly. Leaving the Prime Minister in no doubt as to the real cause of the rush.
Oh, good. Thanks.
Of course, you're going to need his goodwill.
Why?
Well, with the financial crisis, it's obvious we shall have to bring in some form of pay restraint. See, the problem is, the MPs are being denied the pay rise they've been expecting just at the moment that we're due to bring forward the proposed civil service pay rise.
Ah, that's an awkward one.
Yes.
I mean, obviously one isn't interested for oneself.
Of course.
But one does owe it to one's junior colleagues to do everything one can. Ironic, isn't it, Frank? Trying to help them involves raising our own salaries, which we don't care about at all. And then we get accused of feathering our own nests.
Well, that's just another cross we have to bear.
Yes. Envy. Pure envy.
Mm.
Well, you'd better get that proposal in fast before the pay restraint begins.
It'll have to go in the night before next Thursday's cabinet.
Right.
We can't let ministers spend 2 days talking about it to backbenchers and political advisers. They'll come up with all sorts of stupid objections.
And they'll try and delay it until the pay restraint is announced.
Mm. Do you think it's all right to bounce the cabinet 2 weeks running?
Oh, no alternative.
I was thinking, Humphrey, perhaps it'd be better if the proposal came from both of us.
Both of us.
Well, we are effectively joint heads of the civil service.
Not as I understand it, Frank.
Oh, I think so, effectively.
I think not effectively.
Oh, yes. I look after the financial side and you look after the establishment side.
But, Frank, with respect, the cabinet secretary is the de jure head of the civil service.
With respect, Humphrey, the cabinet secretary and the permanent secretary to the treasury are de facto joint heads of the civil service.
Be that as it may, Frank, we can't put up the proposal together. I must remain aloof and judicial. Now, you must make the running, and after weighty consideration, I will finally come down on your side.
All right. One other point. Obviously, we don't want Cabinet to adjudicate on the claim.
No, they must refer it to an impartial committee, as usual.
So who should chair it?
Well, what about Professor Welsh?
That silly old buffer?
That silly old buffer.
Why?
Well, he's asked me to put his name forward as the next chairman of the University Grants Committee. He's desperate for the job, so he'll understand what's required of him.
What an excellent choice.
Astonished. The Treasury has just cancelled half our spending plans because of the financial crisis, and now they have the temerity to put forward a plan for a civil service pay rise. And you're trying to bounce it through Cabinet tomorrow. Even though I instructed you to have all cabinet papers circulated at least 48 hours in advance. Do you think I'm a complete idiot?
The Prime Minister, it is not for me to speak for Sir Frank.
Well, I'm asking you to speak for yourself. You're cabinet secretary. You're also head of the civil service.
Am I indeed? How gratifying.
For the moment.
Well, Prime Minister, as Cabinet Secretary, I'm, of course, most eager to reduce public spending, but as head of the civil service, I'm responsible for the very real dangers which will arise administratively if a pay rise does not come through very soon. It's so difficult for me, you see, as I'm wearing two hats.
Yes, isn't that rather awkward for you?
Not if one is in two minds.
Or has two faces.
Perhaps I should relieve you of one of them.
Oh, no, no, no. I'm perfectly happy with both of them.
Faces?
Hats. You see, Prime Minister, the problem is that low morale will inevitably lead to the danger of a strike. Now, think of the effects of a strike of the computer men on the social services. Furthermore, we are already experiencing difficulties in recruitment.
I thought you had 10 applicants for every vacancy.
Yes, but the applicants are of very low quality, with very few first-class degrees. Most of them have lower seconds.
I got a third.
Oh, that's all right for Prime Minister. Sir Humphrey's talking about civil service.
The point is, I couldn't get this through even if I wanted to. There's already a backbench revolt looming over pay cuts. MPs will never agree to a pay rise for civil servants, and the Cabinet is bound to be hostile.
Well, may I suggest that we just ask the Cabinet merely to agree in principle to look at the application, and then we'll put the matter before an independent group of assessors who will consider the claim in detail.
Who would lead these assessors?
Well, there's a very good man I could recommend. Professor Welsh. Very sound, very sensible, very careful.
I heard he was a silly old buffer.
I can't imagine who could possibly say such a thing.
For my My feeling was that since it's the most senior grades of the service who really bear the heat of the battle, it's they who should receive the greatest increase.
Seems very fair to me.
So this would be the scale.
Right. I haven't seen this, by the way.
No, of course not. Most improper.
Right. Well, they're very significant increases for undersecretaries, deputy secretaries, and those of us who...
Exactly. About 43%. Alas.
But no more than we've earned. Now, I take it that this paper's not for submission.
My dear Humphrey, those are the submission papers.
Ah. Oh, yes. Oh, and then it goes up to Appendix K.
Sorry, six more to follow.
No danger of their wading through all those. Now, where's the one-page summary for the candidate to read?
The Janet and John bit. More or less the same as last time.
Yes.
Comparable jobs in industry.
On whose salary are the comparisons based?
The directors of BP and IBM, naturally.
You don't think that that might be challenged as untypical and above average?
No, because, of course, we don't mention them by name, just the typical industrial firm.
Mm.
Then we take our own new examples of increases from the lowest point in the incremental scale.
As before.
Yeah, quite. And the principal examples of what it would mean to individuals are there at the end. £3.50 a week for a messenger, £4.20 for a registry clerk, £8.20 for a scientific officer. Hardly anything.
Mm. So it would be £26,000 a year extra for us.
More or less.
You haven't mentioned that, I hope.
My dear Humphrey.
Frank, you don't think there's a danger that someone might want to go into this in detail, do you? Not that there's anything wrong with it, of course.
But who would do that? Ministers are only briefed by us, their own officials, and we're all loyal members of the service and want the pay rise.
Yes. Well, obviously, I'll get it in last item before lunch on the cabinet agenda. And with a full agenda, they shouldn't spend more than 5 minutes on it.
They'll be all plain sailing.
Apart from the rigorous scrutiny of Professor Welsh.
Prime Minister, your chief political adviser is on the phone.
Oh, thank you. Put us through. Dorothy.
Prime Minister, I'm doing a paper on this civil service pay claim, but if it's really urgent, I can give you an immediate response.
Yes, please. What's your answer?
I haven't got an answer, nor a series of questions.
What, for me?
For Sir Humphrey. The claim is clearly self-serving and inappropriate and is significant for the questions it leaves unanswered.
Right, fire away.
All right, but I think you should treat this as highly confidential or you'll never catch Humphrey out. First of all, you should ask what deduction...
George. Nice to see you, I think. All right for me to go in, Brennan?
Yes, Sir Humphrey, can I just mention one thing?
Yes? Mr. Brennan?
There has been movement.
On what subject?
On a subject on which the civil service hopes there will be no movement.
The civil service generally hopes there will be no movement on any subject.
Yes, Humphrey, but what I mean is, it's in relation to a subject which is normally wholly and exclusively within the control of the civil service, that developments have developed.
You're speaking in riddles, Bernard.
Oh, thank you, sir.
That was not a compliment, Bernard. Make yourself clear, please.
I'm sorry, Sir Humphrey, my lips are sealed. I am referring confidentially to minutes that I was duty-bound to make of a confidential conversation between the Prime Minister and one of his confidential advisers.
Which adviser?
I'm sorry, Sir Humphrey, I'm not at liberty to divulge her name.
Thank you, Bernard. And this confidential advice was to do with the financial crisis, was it?
Oh, no, Sir Humphrey, much more important.
Not his silly nuclear strategy.
Much more important.
You don't mean the civil service pay claim. What do you advise, Bernard?
Well, I advise you consider your position carefully. Perhaps adopting a more flexible posture while keeping your ear to the ground, covering your retreat and watching your rear.
Thank you, Bernard. You've been a great help.
Actually, Sir Humphrey, I haven't told you anything.
I should hope not, Bernard. That would have been most improper.
Prime Minister, Sir Humphrey's here.
Flexible.
Ah, Humphrey. Come in.
Thanks, Minister.
Tell me what you think of this.
What do you make of it?
Well, it is rather a large document for an instant judgment.
You'll only have to read the one-page summary at the top.
Good.
Well,
Prime Minister, you placed me in a very difficult position.
Do I? Now, look, I realise you have to have loyalty to your colleagues, but you also have a broader loyalty to Cabinet and its policy.
I agree.
You agree?
Yes.
You agree with me?
I agree with you.
I don't quite... Who do you agree with?
With you.
Not with your friend?
No.
You're not arguing with me?
No. Perhaps I haven't made myself quite clear. I agree with you.
Well, what do you make of that pay claim?
It's not excessive in itself, but at a time of national stringency, it is neither wise nor in the national interest. I don't like to criticize my colleague, but in my view, Sir Frank, though no doubt acting from the best of motives, should have placed the good of the nation before the narrower sectional interest of civil servants. You see, this claim raises serious questions.
It's interesting, because I've made a note of some questions, too.
Good questions. Where did they come from?
Occurred to me.
Yes. Well, they're very good questions.
That's what I thought. What should we do about them?
We should ask them.
Who?
Sir Frank, I think you ought to invite him here to discuss them. He may well know the answers. Indeed, he should know them. That's his job, after all.
Yeah. Thank you, Humphrey. Will you arrange that for me, please, Bernard?
Yes,
I must say, I appreciate your impartiality on this, Humphrey. After all, you stand to gain quite a lot out of this yourself, if it were to go through, don't you?
Well, I suppose so, Prime Minister, but quite frankly, I see the rewards of this job as the knowledge that we have been of service to the nation, not to ourselves. Don't you agree, Prime Minister?
I agree. Thank you, Humphrey.
Thank you, Prime Minister.
Humphrey's very fair-minded, really, isn't he?
Oh, yes, Prime Minister.
If there were a conflict of interests, which side was civil service really on?
The winning side, Prime Minister.
Thank you, Billy. Well, obviously, Arnold, it was very painful for me not to be able to support Frank's case.
Deeply distressing.
But clearly he was going to lose, right? And that Wainwright female gave the Prime Minister a list of questions, plus the suggestion that they stop us handling our own pay claims and let a select committee of Parliament decide on them.
Appalling. The next thing you'd have is politicians removing civil servants on the grounds of incompetence. Thin end of the wedge.
Arnold, I need your help. Clearly, Frank's claim is discredited, but I need to get us the pay rise in order to consolidate my own position. Now, what would you do in my place? In fact, what did you do when you were Cabinet Secretary?
You say Frank used the normal formula, comparable jobs in industry.
That's right.
And you need 43%.
Thereabouts.
Well, since virtually all the relevant staff work in London, you should start with a big increase in the London allowance. Allowances count as expenses. They don't count as a rise, so they don't show up in the percentage calculation.
London allowance.
Then you could introduce a special graduate allowance for those with firsts and upper seconds to aid recruitment.
Oxford doesn't give upper seconds, does it?
A second at Oxford counts as an upper second. Then you double the outstanding merit awards. I take it people still get them?
Oh, yes, everyone.
Well, they don't count as rises either. Mm-hmm. Are we getting there?
Well, that still gets us down to only about 18%.
Since last time?
Yeah.
Then don't calculate from last time. Calculate from 1973. That was the high point. And don't just take it to this year. Take it up to 2 years' time, the end of this claim period rather than the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Correcting for inflation, that should do it.
Excellent. Well, the percentage increases will sound all right now, but that still leaves a problem. The overall civil service pay bill will still be too high.
Well, that's easy. You must reduce the size of the civil service.
What?
If the civil service was smaller than last time, a comfortable rise for individuals would be a smaller rise in the total bill.
Yes, but real reductions in the size of the service would be the end of civilization, wouldn't it? No, my dear Humphrey, all you do is stop calling them civil servants.
Take the museums, for instance. If you turn them into independent trusts, then all the staff stop being classified as civil servants.
They're still the same people doing the same job and still being paid by government grants, of course. But as it's a grant, it doesn't count in the pay statistics. Unless anyone inquires closely, it'll look like a cutback.
But can we set up so many trusts in time?
Well, you may not have to do it at all. It only has to be planned for some time in the next 2 years. If it doesn't happen, it won't be your fault. Meanwhile, it means you should be able to get the rise to work out at 6% overall.
Oh, thank you, Arnold. That's a great help.
Oh, well, thank you, Lige. Especially with the birthday honours coming up. Should I talk to Frank about this, too?
No, Arnold. Leave it to me. Not at the moment. Frank's got a lot of problems coming up.
Really? He hasn't mentioned them?
Probably because he doesn't know about them yet.
And, as I say, civil service pay has fallen significantly behind comparable jobs in industry.
What comparable jobs?
Well, it's quite a complex formula, but it has been generally accepted for some time.
Well, I understand that a permanent secretary earns over £45,000 a year. And the Cabinet Secretary and the Permanent Secretary of the Treasury earn in excess of £51,000.
Maybe all right.
Don't you know how much you earn, Frank?
Have you just slipped your memory back? Yes, but if that's what industry is paying...
What do you think, Humphrey?
Well, it's not for me to say, Prime Minister. I have a vested interest. And Sir Frank is in charge of civil service pay, aren't you, Frank?
Prime Minister, may I ask?
Yes.
Sir Frank, what deduction do you make for job security?
I beg your pardon?
What people in industry can get sacked, pushed out in takeovers, their firms can go bust, but your jobs are guaranteed.
Well, there are swings and roundabouts.
What are the roundabouts?
Pressure, long hours.
Don't those happen in industry?
And industrial leaders have to take decisions and stand by them.
So do civil servants.
Oh, really? I thought the ministers took the decisions.
And the blame. That's the deal, isn't it?
Yes, well, ministers do, of course, take the decisions, but civil servants have to decide how to carry it out.
Like a secretary, deciding how to lay out a letter.
Yes. No, I think Sir Humphrey knows what I mean there.
Well, it's up to you, Frank. You're in charge of civil service pay.
What about the service element?
Service element? What do you mean, service element?
Well, there is a strong element of service about the job, isn't there?
Absolutely.
Rewarded by CBs and KCMGs and knighthoods. Sir Frank?
To an extent.
You see, Prime Minister, I wonder whether we shouldn't compare civil servants with directors of charities rather than industries. I think they get about 17,000 a year on average rather than 75,000.
That's an interesting proposal.
Oh, no, I don't think we'd never recruit. I mean, morale would plummet. I'm sure Sir Humphrey would agree.
Humphrey?
Well, it's my opinion that Sir Frank is in charge of civil service. And I do think that the Prime Minister is entitled to an answer, Frank.
And then there's the question of indexed pensions.
Oh, well, those were agreed a long time ago.
But they're still of considerable value, aren't they?
Oh, value, yes, but modest.
I have an estimate here that it would cost £650,000 to buy back a permanent secretary's pension.
Oh, that's absurd.
How would you value it?
About £100,000.
Oh, well, in that case, I'll make you a deal, Frank. The government will buy back your pension and anyone else's who's willing to sell at your own valuation. We'll pay you £100,000 in cash for your pension rights. Okay?
I was talking out of off the top of my head. It could be. I haven't calculated it myself.
The figure of £650,000 comes from the Society of Insurance and Pension Actuaries.
Yes. But when it was agreed, I'm sure it was nothing like that.
Well, what about this for an idea? An indexed pension could be an alternative to honours. Every civil servant could choose which way he wanted to take his reward, honours or cash.
But that's preposterous.
Why?
Yes, why?
Well, it would put them in an impossible position. Well, what about those who already have honours?
It's quite simple. They could choose whether to renounce their honour or whether to renounce their pension indexing. What do you think, Sir Humphrey?
Well,
or will you be Mr. Appleby?
I'm sure that Sir Frank has gone into this very thoroughly.
No, not thoroughly enough. After all, you'd stand to gain quite a lot personally from this if it went through, wouldn't you?
Prime Minister, that is not a consideration.
You mean you'd be happy to be personally excluded from this rise? I know the Cabinet Secretary would be, wouldn't you, Humphrey?
Well, of course. The question is, in essence, not as President... thinking of the service as a whole, from the long term, as a matter of principle.
Go on.
Of course, if the government did believe that senior people should be paid less than their subordinates, and if the principle were extended to cabinet ministers and their junior ministers.
Anyway, Frank, thank you very much for coming.
Thank you, Prime Minister.
What to make of that? Were we a bit hard on Frank, do you think?
Oh, on the contrary. Most proper and penetrating questions of MSS.
You know, what happens now?
Well, I'd like a word in private, if I may.
I'm just going.
Oh, good.
Dorothy.
Thank you very much indeed.
Yes, sir.
Dear lady.
Not as dear as the Cabinet Secretary, Humphrey.
Prime Minister, this is so difficult for me. One does so hate to be disloyal to one's colleagues.
Clearly, you've never been a Cabinet Minister.
You know, I've felt all along, at a time of stringency, that the Treasury claim was too high, not in the nation's interest. Very nice for civil servants, of course, but not something that the Cabinet Secretary, with his higher loyalty, could recommend. And that is why we don't let the Permanent Secretary to the Treasury become head of the civil service. So I've taken the liberty of drawing up a much more modest submission, which, as you will see, is only 11% over 2 years, with the top grades rising by only about the average, and the overall civil service pay bill going up by only 6%. A year over the period.
This looks much more reasonable.
Yes. Well, of course, the lower grades will have to go through the normal procedures, but may I suggest that the First Division claim should be processed with the utmost secrecy and speed.
Secrecy, why?
Well, if there were widespread discussion, it might backfire. Some of our people might want to put in a much bigger claim, much better to present them with a fait accompli, you see. And may I advise against letting advisers see it?
Are you sure your colleagues would accept such a small rise, 6%?
Well, if I had your support and cooperation over the secrecy, yes.
It's still got to get through Parliament. Backbenchers always hate civil service pay rises.
Oh, how interesting you should say that. I was just about to make a suggestion. A major reform.
Yes.
Well, Prime Minister, if MPs' salaries were to be linked to a grade in the civil service, they wouldn't have to keep voting themselves pay rises all the time. Every time the civil service got one, they'd get one as well, automatically. And if MPs' pensions were to be index-linked as well, it would make them much less hostile to civil service pay claims.
Certainly would. Excellent. Thank you, Humphrey.
Prime Minister.
What grade do you think backbenchers ought to be?
Oh, I thought senior principals...
Isn't that rather low?
Well, backbenchers are rather low.
To what grade should cabinet ministers be linked?
Undersecretaries.
And the Prime Minister?
Well, at the moment you earn even less than I do. Why don't you grade yourself the permanent secretary?
Thank you, Humphrey.
After all, this is a partnership.
Yes. A real partnership.
Yes, Prime Minister.
Thank you.